Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Jays From Away podcast, episode 13. This week we have our minor league roundup, followed by the conversation with Vancouver Canadiens blogger and man about town, Charlie Caskey. So sit back, ladies and gentlemen, take a listen and get your Blue Jays on. It's the Blue Jays From Away podcast. And now the minor league roundup. As we head into August, it's the last month of minor league baseball, and how the time has flown. After a torrid start to their season from the offense, the Buffalo Bisons have cooled off considerably despite getting strong outings from their pitching this week. They went 4-3 and are still within striking distance of a playoff spot with a 57-54 record, just 2.5 games behind the Pawtucket Red Sox. The Bisons got some great pitching this week, getting a strong outing from Ricky Romero, Thad Weber, and Chenming Wong, who was a hard luck loser in Thursday's game. The gem of the week goes to Justin Germano, who went most of the way in a combined shutout on Wednesday. Kevin Pillar continues to hit, although he's hitting only .256 in the last 10 games, and 4 of those 11 hits are for extra bases. He's also striking out a lot more lately, racking up 27 strikeouts in 156 at-bats in Buffalo, compared to 31 strikeouts in 304 at-bats in New Hampshire. Speaking of New Hampshire, the Fisher Cats hit the losing skids, putting up a 7-game losing streak followed by a win and another loss in their week. In the calendar week, going back to last Friday, that's 1-5. They've slipped to a 53-56 record, but are only 2 games out of a playoff spot, tied for 3rd in the Eastern Division with Portland. The starting pitching staff has been bolstered by the assignment of both Kyle Drabek and Drew Hutchison, and the rotation boasts 2 former big leaguers, Drabek and Hutch, as well as 2 of the team's top prospects, Stroman and Nolan, as well as Deck McGuire and Marcus Walden. Marcus Stroman has been the story for the Fisher Cats, posting his 2nd 13-strikeout game within a month on Wednesday, which followed an 11-strikeout performance the outing before. Overall, Stroman has excellent numbers in AA with a 2.96 ERA, 92 strikeouts and only 21 walks in 76 innings, and has only allowed 60 hits. Third baseman Andy Burns is showing signs of life, although his average over the past 10 games is only .250. He's had 3 multi-hit games in that time and has hit a home run in each of his last 2 games. He's still striking out a lot and needs to get on base more. The Dunedin Blue Jays continue their second half struggles and sit in last place in the North Division of the Florida State League with a 16-22 record after a 4-3 week. Igniting the DJs last week was the outstanding play of first baseman Casey Hobson, who has cooled down quite a bit. Aaron Sanchez had possibly his worst start of the year, not even making it out of the first inning and getting tagged for 5 runs. The Lansing Lugnuts are 14-25 in the second half, just a half game out of last place in the Midwest League Eastern Division after a 4-3 week. Daniel Norris continues to struggle with inconsistency, and Roberto Osuna has reported that he's not going to be pitching for the rest of the year and is currently at the minor league complex in Dunedin. There has been some movement this week with Jorge Flores and Kramer Champlin getting promoted to Dunedin and Colton Turner, Eric Brown, Jordan Leyland, and Daniel Klein arriving from Vancouver. Pitching very effectively has been 6th-round pick Matt Boyd, who has been working out of the bullpen or in very limited starting stints after a long season of college ball. 8th-round pick Kendall Graveman and 9th-rounder Chad Giroto haven't been as effective in the small amounts that they've seen on the mound in Lansing. Dwight Smith Jr. had a day to remember yesterday as the Lugnuts split a doubleheader with South Bend. Smith went 2-for-3 in the first game with a double and a walk, and went 4-for-4 with a home run and a walk in the second game. Getting on base 8 times in a day is an impressive feat. The Vancouver Canadiens are in a bit of a funk, going 2-5 this week and sit in a 3-way tie for 2nd place in the North Division, 3 games behind the Everett Aqua Sox. There was some movement with several players moving up to Lansing, and the Canadiens receiving catcher Seth Connor from Lansing and Canadian pitchers Shane Dawson and Tom Robson from Bluefield. We'll talk a lot more Van Cees with blogger Charlie Caskey in a minute or so stay tuned to hear more. The Bluefield team continues to be the class of the Appalachian League, with the best record in the entire league and sitting in first place in their division with a 1.5 game cushion on the Pulaski Mariners with a 27-13 record. Showing their pitching depth, the Bluefield Blue Jays went 5-1 this week, throwing 3 shutouts at their opposition and giving up only 2 runs in the other 2 victories. Their only loss came by a 5-1 score. The team is really hitting on all cylinders, despite losing 2 of their top starting prospects to Vancouver. Chase DeYoung continues to dominate, as do Jairo Laborte and Alberto Tirado. Adonis Cardona continues to struggle with his control and the ability to maintain his velocity. On the offensive side, it's like a well-oiled machine, with Tim LaCastro getting on base at an incredible rate, 411 OBP, and Mitch Ney, Matt Dean, and Dowell Lugo slugging at well over a 400 pace. DJ Davis is definitely having good and bad days. He has an outstanding 13 extra base hits, but also leads the club with 45 strikeouts. Finally, the GCL Blue Jays went 2-5 this week, and a lot of players are struggling with their introduction to pro ball. Boomer Collins, or as he's listed on MILB.com, Thomas Collins III, is tearing up the league but is still 24 years old. Jays' second-round draft pick Clinton Holland has been getting good reviews for his fastball as well as his off-speed stuff in his 2 appearances so far, while Matt Smorrell has been struggling with his control, walking 17 in just over 11 innings. The best pitchers on the staff have been undrafted free agents Corey Gorman and Chris Rowley. The two, who were born 4 days apart in mid-August of 1990, they'll both turn 23 this month, are both absolutely dominating the GCL after 4-year colleges. Rowley, an Army grad who only signed a 60-day contract, is expected to return to West Point in September to work as a graduate assistant before beginning his military career, but there remains a possibility that he could gain an exemption from military service to continue his pro career. Gorman, who signed out of the University of Scranton, has a cloudier future. That's all for the Minor League Roundup. Stay tuned for The Conversation with Vancouver Canadiens blogger Charlie Caskey. Welcome back to the Blue Jays from the Way podcast. I'm here with Vancouver Canadiens guru, writer Charlie Caskey. Charlie writes, among many places, he writes for his own blog, Your Van Sees. That's yourvancs.com, as well as Jays Journal. And I believe you have a blog for the Vancouver Sun.
Yeah, well, the Sun actually just picked up my Your Van Sees blog. So it's syndicated. I write for The Sun, and then 24 hours later, I get to post it online, which makes it difficult when I'm writing game reports because they're obviously a little bit behind. But it's a much bigger platform for me to get the message out there about the Vancouver Canadiens.
So that's welcome to Charlie Caskey. We're going to talk some Vancouver Canadiens. Last week, you heard a lot about the Bluefield Blue Jays as I was reporting and had some interviews from down there. And so this week, we're going to move up the ladder one rung and probably follow a couple of players who have moved up the ladder as well to the Vancouver Canadiens.
Yeah, well, Tom Robson and Shane Dawson just arrived a few days ago. They flew straight to Eugene and joined up with the team there. Both have started and both threw very well by the sounds of it. I tried to speak to Tom last night, but after they lost, he didn't feel it appropriate to come out and be interviewed, which is a shame. So hopefully I can catch up to him in the next couple of days. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, obviously Tom's a local kid from Ladner, which is, you know, half an hour drive from that Bailey Stadium. And, Shane's an interesting story as well, because we're going to try to figure it out, but he may be the most northern player ever to come into affiliated baseball.
Well, that would be really interesting. I did have a chance to talk to both of them in Bluefield, and they're both fine young men. They're both still fairly young, I think about 20 years old, and both had excellent success in Bluefield. I guess you haven't seen them pitch because they both pitched in Eugene.
Both pitched in Eugene, and I'm away this weekend, so I'm going to miss them both again, which is frustrating, similar to my Daniel Norris experience last year where I never got to see him pitch. But hopefully these guys are in Vancouver for the remainder of the season, so I'll have plenty of time to catch him in August. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I read your reports on your website. It'll be interesting. I was chatting to another writer for the Vancouver Province, the other major daily here in Vancouver, last night, and he was saying that from what he heard, Robson was a bit of a stretch for the Jays in the fourth round, but, you know, he's a big kid, throws low 90s. You'll be able to confirm that. It's on the weighted ball program now, so hopefully that velocity increases, and we'll see what happens.
Well, yes, exactly. That is what I saw, and he has an incredible sinking fastball or sinker ball, and I talked to Paul Quantrill about that, and it seems that he's almost like a combination between Marcus Walden and Jeremy Gabareski, because he does strike out more than Gabareski and did at the same level in Bluefield. And apparently he's really been working on getting contact and pitching to contact early in the counts to get some quick outs. And he's been able to go deeper into games than most of the Bluefield pitching staff because of that. He does throw 90 to 92. It seems like it's a fairly easy motion. It doesn't seem like he's overthrowing to get that velocity. And I didn't see much of his off-speed stuff. His curveball was a little inconsistent, but Quantrill definitely likes his off-speed stuff, having worked with him both for the junior national team in Canada as well as a little bit as a roving instructor.
Oh, okay, I didn't realize you worked with him in the at the JNT. That's interesting to know.
Yeah, so in terms of what I saw from Dawson, I've heard him that he hits as high as 92 on the radar gun. I personally didn't see that. I saw him sitting 86 to 88, and I couldn't really see the plane of his off-speed stuff. So he does strike out a lot of guys, or he has been striking out a lot of guys. So with him, it'll be interesting. I did see him touch 90. So there may be more velocity in that arm coming. And, you know, from the left side, if he can hit the low 90s consistently, get up to 92, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, I had a very, very brief chat with him yesterday before the game. He didn't, you know, whereas, you know, Robson, with his frame, you can see the projectability, but Johnson didn't strike me as a very big kid. But as you say, you know, if it's an easy motion, and he's hitting low 90s there at his age, you could probably assume that he will ramp that up at least a mile or two. And from the left side, you know, doors tend to open up for those sorts of guys. They don't necessarily always remain as starters, but he may be able to find a niche, you know, somewhere else in the rotation.
Exactly. And I can definitely see both of these guys going to the high minors at least. Robson, you know, again, seeing him in person really opened my eyes, and he seems to be really putting things together. He has very good control. I think he's only walked about six batters in about 30 some odd innings in Bluefield. So with good control, being very aggressive in his approach, I really don't want to speculate as what his ceiling is, but I think he could be a surprise, especially next year.
Yeah, they both could be. You're right. I hate to speculate. I don't want to. You know, sort of trying to map out these kids' future, because it's a long road ahead of them, and they've got plenty of obstacles to clear. But, you know, with his size and if you say, you know, the control he's exhibited so far, and you know, he showed it in his first start here in the Northwest League. He could sort of start making his way a bit more quickly through the system. As I said, hopefully not this year. I hope we've got him for the rest of the year so I can take a good look at him. But then you're looking at, you know, a Lansing assignment next year in his first full season assignment, and then see how it goes from there. And as you say, I didn't realize that Dawson, I knew he'd been putting up decent strikeout numbers, but if you look at what he's been doing in Bluefield this year, and then, you know, his first game here was a small sample size, but six and four innings. He's definitely got something. He's got. I'm looking forward to taking a look at him and see how many swing strikes he's generating, or if he's just fooling hitters right now.
Absolutely. And let's talk about another Canadian who's been moved up to Vancouver, and that's Eric Brown. Eric was pretty much the ace of the staff since the beginning of the season. He was the opening day starter, a Thunder Bay native. What do you see out of him, and what do you see him doing in Lansing?
I, You know what? I don't want to speculate. I don't think. I said it last night. As I said, I was chatting to the same writer, and both very happy for Eric. He was too good for the Northwest League, but I think there's a chance he won't be good enough for the Midwest League. So he could very much be one of these guys that's right in the middle of these two leagues, sort of right in the middle of rookie ball and full season A. He's a control pitcher. He throws sort of 88, 89. His changeup, I think he worked a lot on his off speed stuff over the off season, and his changeup's really come a long way. So he was able to fool hitters here in the Northwest League, but as Taylor Cole has shown, you know, that doesn't work sometimes when you move up a level, because Taylor could absolutely baffle hitters here in rookie league ball with his changeup, but it doesn't seem to be carrying through to the Midwest League. So, you know, I wish him all the best. He's a really nice kid. The one time I talked to him, he did say he worked hard this off season physically, which is the main part of his success this year, was that he was able to carry on through 6-7 innings, you know, with the same velocity and being able to finish his pitches, you know, from inning 1 through 7, which is what he attributed, you know, most of his success to this year. So I hope it translates. I hope he does well, but I have my reservations.
Well, sticking with some of the pitching side of the ledger, let's talk about the other guy who I guess is the remaining ace, with Colton Turner sent up as well. You've got Jeremy Gaboreski, who until his last start has been pretty unbelievable in what he's been doing this season.
He's been great. Yeah, as you said, you know, his last start he got knocked around a bit. I meant to ask the pitching coach Jim Psychowski last night, you know, what happened that start. But he's similar to Tom in that he pitches to contact. He keeps the ball down. Gets a lot of ground balls. He doesn't walk hitters, which is difficult in this league with some of the umpires they have. He's a big kid. I think he's like 6'2", 210 now. So you don't really see much more maturing on the physical side. I think he sort of reached, he might be able to thin out a bit. It was quite funny when I was talking to Jim a couple of weeks ago that he said, I don't mean to sound this way, but he's got quite a bit of puppy fat still. So they've got him on quite a rigorous exercise regime, in addition to the weighted. He's also on the weighted ball program, one of the 10 minor leaguers that are being trialed on it. So, you know, they hope he sits sort of upper 80s. He can hit low 90s, but when I saw him last, you know, when he was hitting 92, 93, he looked to be overthrowing it a bit, and he rarely threw those pitches for strikes. So if he can comfortably get up to the lower 90s, then he'll probably have a bit of success going forward. If he doesn't see that velocity jump, I think he'll struggle. You know, because again, going back to the Taylor Cole example, it's all well and good here, but then when you get up to the Midwest League and even Florida State League, when hitters are you know, get a bit smarter and a bit older and are able to make adjustments on the fly, he could struggle.
Right, and I did see Taylor Cole pitch in Lansing this year, and he definitely sits in the high 80s, similar to Gaboreski, but I don't think, I would assume that Gaboreski has much better sink on his ball rather than Cole does.
He does. He does work down. He's very good. He's got a good sinking, you know, sort of action on his fastball. And, you know, again, talking to Tchaikovsky last week, he said Taylor Cole threw, it was almost like 60-40 fastball to changeup, because he knew he could fool hitters down here with that changeup. Whereas he's learning in the Midwest League, and you've seen him, that's not necessarily the case. So he's having to work and spot his fastball better, and it's just not sort of, you know, he's had some very good starts in the Midwest League. It hasn't been all doom and gloom, but, you know, I think he's learning that without being able to command his fastball, it's not really going to work out for him.
Okay, well, let's get to a couple of guys that I wanted to ask you about who are this year's draftees. I believe Matt Dermody, Scott Silverstein. Both of these guys were drafted this year and have been assigned perhaps not initially, Silverstein, I think, made an appearance in Bluefield first before he jumped up to Vancouver. What have you seen out of these guys that you might be able to tell some of our listeners?
Silverstein pitched last night, actually, and I'd seen them both pitch before. They were piggybacking for a few starts, those two, switching who was starting, and they threw a very good game on the last homestand. Both, you know, both kept the ball down, both, you know, with great control, but they've been quite inconsistent. After that start, they went on the road and they both got knocked around. So I actually kept a close eye on Silverstein last night, and I was impressed, actually. He's a big guy. Apparently I was chatting to the radio play-by-play guy for Hillsborough, who was just a fountain of knowledge last night. It was quite interesting. He said that Silverstein was very highly regarded coming out of high school, actually. But decided to go to college and, you know, maybe didn't pitch as well in college as expected. So it was a later round pick for the Jays. But he's a left-handed pitcher. He's a big guy, you know, massive. He's like 6'5", 250 or something like that. I think if you look on his baseball reference page, they have him as 210, but he's not. And last night he was throwing really well. He was hitting, he was getting it up to 93. I don't think he was sitting there. He was probably sitting more in the 91, 92 range, but with his height, he was creating an excellent downward plane on his fastball, and he was moving it to both sides of the plate. So, you know, as I said last night, I was very impressed with him. Dermody, I haven't seen him enough to really, as I said, they've both been a bit inconsistent. And I haven't seen enough of Dermody to really draw up formulate a sound opinion of him. I think he, as I said, in that one great start they both had, same thing, kept the ball down, pitched to contact, great control. It's just that in the bad starts I haven't seen, or in the bad appearances, I haven't seen exactly what's been going wrong to sort of try and figure out what he'll be going forward.
Well, yes, and last night I believe Silverstein threw two innings and struck out three. Again, even if he ends up in the high minors as a relief pitcher, as a lefty, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I believe the knock on him was he's had some injury problems college.
In college he had some injury problems, that's right, which affected his draft stock. As I said, he was quite highly regarded coming in. I mean, he was the 32nd round coming in high school, so he wasn't that highly regarded, but nevertheless, he did have some injury problems in college, and that sort of hurt his stock somewhat. But yeah, he pitched very well last night. And, you know, as I said, you look at the baseball reference, it's got him a 6'5", 205, which you think, oh, that's, he's going to put on some weight. He's put on the weight. He's a really big kid. So, you know, if he gets that fastball up, you know, at 23, how much more, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, at MILB.com, they have him listed at 250.
And
As far as his fastball goes, I have heard as well that his arm is not in the best of shape right now because of being worked so much in college. And it's after a fairly long season in college as well, so that, you know, these guys have been ridden hard, especially for teams that have College World Series aspirations. And I think that's why you see Matt Boyd in Lansing being used as a reliever. I think maybe for the rest of the year, Silverstein needs to be used in the same way, just to give his arm a bit of a break.
Yeah, and I think that's why they were piggybacking with Dermody. I mean, it's funny. You almost forget that sometimes when you move away from being the writer and more to being the fan, is, you know, you forget that these kids have had, you know, a lot of them have had very, very long college seasons, you know, 60 to 70 games. And then, you know, they'll take a week break or whatever they get, and they're thrown straight into pro ball. And, you know, these guys are at the yard early and are working all day. So, you know, fatigue must be setting in for not only the pitchers, but some of the position players, which is why, you know, Canadian catcher Mike Reeves is on a two-on, one-off schedule right now, because they're just trying to physically get them through the season.
Right. So, well, that's a great segue. You did the work for me. Let's talk about Mike Reeves from Peterborough, Ontario. drafted this year, I believe in the 21st round. What have you seen? He's not leading the team in hitting anymore. He's had a few off games and that average has dropped a little bit. What have you seen out of Michael Reaves?
Yeah, it was funny because as soon as he became qualified with the league to actually lead it, he's gone into a slump. Early in the season, first and foremost, let me say, I think he's a very good hitter. He sees the pitch for a long time. He's very patient. You know, he'll take a walk. He gets himself into hitters' counts more often than not. However, he doesn't have a ton of power. He doesn't have gap power, right now at least. So initially, there was a lot of singles finding holes, and his batting average of balls in play was ridiculous. It was like 560 through the first 3 weeks or 4 weeks of him on the team. And now, you know, it's starting to level out a bit. And last night, he hit a shot up the middle that at the beginning of the season would have been a hit for him, but last night, the shortstop gobbled it up, and that was that. So he's definitely falling prey to the BABIP gods at the moment. That being said, he's a good defensive catcher. He's got a decent arm. I don't think it's a plus. And as I said, he's a smart hitter. He gets himself into good hitters counts where he can be aggressive and go after pitchers. And I think, you know, now that he's slumping, I think he's chasing it just a bit more. He struck out last night. He worked the count full and then struck out on a changeup that was above his letters, you know, whereas earlier in the season, you wouldn't have seen that at all. So I think the grind is starting to wear some of these kids down, and they're just going to have to be creative with how, you know, Seth Connor has just come down from Lansing. They've still got Matt Hitt. They're just going to have to be creative how they get all these guys at bats and how they rest, you know, get rest for Reaves and some of the other guys like LB Dantzler that have had long college careers long college seasons and are probably feeling it a bit. And surprisingly, it's been unbelievably hot in Vancouver this summer. So that's also going to wear on them a bit.
Right. And you mentioned LB Dantzler, who he's been one of my favorite guys. I sort of triggered on him coming out of the draft as one of the few batters or position players that the Blue Jays drafted who seemed to have any sort of power in his college career. And he definitely has cashed in on that in his time in Vancouver, hasn't he?
He has. I mean, he got off to a bit of a slow start. I think he was, you know, I think just coming out of college and working with a new hitting instructor, he was maybe making a few adjustments where he was trying to see pitches a bit longer. He was getting his load ready early. And he wasn't, you know, sort of going with his strengths. And when I say strengths, his ability to pull the ball and get his hips through the ball and really drive it. Whereas, you know, it's funny because I think of his 7 home runs, I don't believe he's hit any of them at home. So we haven't seen one. He hit an absolute shot last night at that wasn't him. That was Andy for me. But I mean, he's shown definite gap power here. The road trip he just had, the 8-game road trip was unbelievable with 4 home runs, 5 home runs, 2 doubles, to put him in the lead, the Northwest League lead of, I'm writing a post about it now, doubles, home runs, slugging percentage, total bases, you know, and this is a kid that joined the team however many games it was in the season, into the season. So yeah, he's come on leaps and bounds, in the last couple of weeks. Now, tempering that good news, he was hit on the foot last night with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball, so I left the game. So hopefully one of those little bones in his feet didn't break, because that would bring his season to a skidding halt, I would imagine.
Well, I was actually just going to ask you that, because I did notice that in the box score he did come out of the game after just one at bat. So I was actually just going to ask you about that, but thanks for answering that question for our listeners. And that LB Dantzler came out after getting hit by a pitch in the foot. So we hope he's okay.
He stayed in the game, but then they brought him out of his next AB. And from what I gathered, it was just precautionary. You know, they sent him home, had him ice it, and they were going to reevaluate this morning. And hopefully it's just a bruise. But Yeah, the Hillsborough pitcher last night was a first rounder, compensation round, and he was dealing, he was bringing it. So, you know, 95 miles an hour in the foot would hurt.
Yes, I don't want to take one of those. I want to ask you about a couple more guys who were picked in the draft this year that you've seen a little bit. If you want to just say a couple things about, or one or two things about each guy, you've got Brendan Kalfas, you've got Chaz Frank, both outfielders, as well as David Harris, who's been playing a lot of third base.
David Harris has been surprisingly good. He went to Southern Arkansas, very small school, so probably not as highly regarded, but excellent defensively. In the box, his hands, I've never seen quicker hands. And don't get me wrong, I haven't seen hundreds and hundreds of players, but he has extremely quick hands, and he has the torque on his hips is unbelievable. So he, for a smaller guy, and he looks small on the field, but he's actually not that small. He's like 6 foot, 180 or whatever. He can generate quite a bit of power. The other guys, Kalfas, speed, although I think Kalfas was 0 for 5 in his first 5 stolen base attempts, was getting on base a ton, you know, when he first came into the team, was walking, I think his walk percentage was 33% or something, it was unbelievable. But I think pitchers are starting to figure him out a bit now. Same with Chaz Frank, if you add Ian Parmalee into the mix, who's second year Vancouver Canadian now, we've got three very similar outfielders. Speed guys, I can't foresee a position for them going forward. I mean, Parmalee's an excellent center fielder defensively. He's got unbelievable speed out of the batter's box. I mean, if he drops a good bump down, teams don't have a chance. But if you look at Lansing, you've got Dalton Pompey, you know, you've got DJ Davis in Bluefield, Dwight Smith Jr. You've got all these players that don't really project to be corner outfielders. So you've got sort of this logjam of center fielders. And I think the names I've just mentioned, I think even Dwight Smith Jr. has got to find another position. I don't think Kalfas and company really have much of a future. I hate to say it, but you never know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, of the bunch, I think Kalfas has got the best numbers so far. Kalfas is hitting .285 with a .367 OBP. And there looks like there's a little pop in that bat. But one thing that I did notice looking at his college numbers, he did win his conference's batting championship this year. But again, I didn't see very much power in the bat. And if he's fast and if he gets on base, and I hear he has a great arm and he's very good defensively. But again, these are things that are great for a center fielder, but for a corner outfielder, you definitely want to see a little bit more pop.
Vancouver is loaded right now with center fielders that are playing, you know, out of position if you think about it in that respect. Which is fun to watch them at the net, because it's a huge field. So watching these guys track down, you know, line drives. Last night in the first inning, Alonso Gonzalez got hit pretty hard actually, but everything was flagged down by these guys because they do cover a lot of ground in the outfield.
Right, and there's just two more guys I wanted to ask you about. Both of them seem to be having fairly similar seasons. Dickie Thon and Justin Atkinson, they're a couple of middle infielders. And Thon has been around in the Blue Jays organization for several years now and has had well-known health issues, and he's sort of finally putting it all together in season. And Atkinson, of course, is another Canadian playing for the Canadians. And I believe this is Atkinson's first year in Vancouver.
It is, yeah. He was assigned right out of extended. Only 19, so initially the youngest guy on the team by quite a ways, actually. Came in as, well, he was drafted as a middle infielder. I believe second base was his primary position. Moved to first base at Instructs in September. Played at first all through extended, and I just didn't get it. When the team was composed, because they had three first basemen to start the season, and he was quickly actually moved over to third, and he's played well at third actually, because he put on a bit of weight, muscle weight, with the move to first, but he's been fine at third. again, whether his bat will play it at a corner infield spot, I don't know. He hasn't exhibited a ton of power, not only this year, but throughout his minor league career. But he's only 19.
Right.
So that sort of thing may come.
Right.
Our conversation got interrupted, but when we returned, Charlie talked to me a little bit more about Dickie Thon, the enigmatic shortstop for the Vancouver Canadiens.
He's been all right this year. Defensively, he's been poor, but I spoke to Clayton, and they're gonna let him stick it short for as long as possible, but I don't see why.
Well, I think they've got a few guys who are playing short that will not end up there. Seeing Dowell Lugo, I have a feeling that he's not going to end up a shortstop. And everyone who sees Franklin Barreto play says that he's not going to end up at shortstop. So there's a lot of guys that won't be in shortstop that they're leaving there for now.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I guess they just want to, he's in my eyes, he's definitely organizational. So you need shortstops, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he's been really streaky hitting this year. He's the only guy on the team that still has that sort of exaggerated leg kick, which, as you talked about with Andy, with Burns, it's a difficult thing. Your timing has to be perfect. And if your timing goes, then you're in trouble.
Right. So that's interesting to hear. Cause again, I haven't seen Dickie play, so that seeing him or not being able to see him, I don't know what his mechanics are like. So hearing that he's got that exaggerated leg kick definitely is an interesting thing to hear.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen these college kids come out. They all seemingly are taught, and I've even playing myself now at, over 30s, I've changed where they have much wider bases and they get their foot down really early, with a minimal of movement, whether it's just a heel tap or a short toe tap. You rarely see the Jose Bautista style, timing leg kick anymore with younger players. But Dickie Thon still has it. And to me, he looks like a guess hitter. If he's guessing fastball and he gets it, he can put a charge into it. But if he gets fooled, then he can look really bad.
Right. So we'll see how he progresses. I mean, he's putting up pretty decent numbers, which means he may end up in Lansing next year. And we'll see what happens as he attempts to, take on better competition.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jorge Flores I saw promoted to Dunedin recently, which is surprising considering the start he got off to, but good for him. So I don't know if that means a spot's open up there. I'm guessing they're just going to spread the at-bats around to Leblegie. I can never say his name. Jason, we'll call him.
Jason Leblebigian.
Leblebigian and some of the other guys that are already up there. But yeah, I mean, I can see him in Lansing next year. He's streaky, as I said. He was hitting just over 300 at one point. He's back down to 260 now. So he's very up and down. He had a good game last night, actually. He had two solid singles. But yeah, I don't know. Defensively, he doesn't strike me as a very good shortstop, and I think he'll be found out. I think he's susceptible to off-speed stuff, especially away. See how it goes.
Well, as with all of the other young players in Vancouver, time will tell. And so with that, we're going to say goodbye to Charlie Caskey, blogger extraordinaire, writer about the Vancouver Canadiens and the owner and host of Your Van Sees, YourVancs, the Uber blog about the Vancouver Canadiens. Thanks a lot, Charlie, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me. Talk soon.
That wraps it up for episode number 13 of the Blue Jays From Away podcast. I'd like to thank Charlie Caskey, blogger for YourVanSees.com and Jays Journal. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @JaysFromAway. Come on back next week and go Jays go! No!